Yeah, that exercise is a very important, very simple, but quite important exercise. It's like there are two ways, there's lots of ways of doing these exercises, but there's the one way where we sort of relax inwards and go down, and just go down, and go into this sort of almost, it's like in the sleeping kind of posture, where we just descend into. But the other complementary posture is the posture of standing and walking and being with the, or bringing the inside outside and exploring the meeting. You know, so we experimented a bit with standing as a tree and walking as a tree, becoming Ents in the Tolkien. We'll think of the Ents, the good images of that. But the other thing that we were doing was really looking at the space around us and looking at the directions of space. So we're locating ourselves in space. We're locating ourselves in the place where the inside and the outside come together. And at one level, this is something that is very important, this place of the energies of directions. You find, you know, it's something that's very important in the Welsh tradition. And in fact, normally all earth-based religious or spiritual systems, say in the Native American traditions as well, they have the medicine wheel and the directions. You can find it in South American traditions because they're relating to the spirituality of the environment and of the universe. One of the great things that happens, if people have had experiences of doing shamanic work in other traditions, is you then get the great argument about what happens in each direction. So if I was Native American teacher, you know, I'd be telling you completely different qualities from the different directions, and people get into quite fierce arguments about is the right direction. The thing is, the thing that most people, when they're in that place, don't seem to know or forget, is that the directions are literal. So if you're Welsh, the west is where a lot of the rain comes from. So it has a lot of connection with water. Yeah? The south is a slightly warmer place than the north. Wales is quite small. There's not a huge, we're not talking huge variation here, but there is some variation. So basically the directions and the ideas of directions literally do come out of the landscape. You know, and there are some things that are obviously common to all cultures. The sun rises in the east and sets in the west. Although if you're in the southern hemisphere, it goes round the other way. The sun moves from south to north to west. I've got some friends in South Africa who had their house built by an American, and they built it so it would be a wonderful sun trap. And God help them, like you would, because I wouldn't have thought of it either, probably. They oriented the house beautifully to the south, where the sun comes from. But actually, you know what? The sun comes from the north. The sun at noon is pointing from the north. And so their poor old house is really cold. So there's something important, really. The whole thing about the directions, there is, of course, an universality of it in the east and west. But then there is individual directionality. That's an universal kind of principle, but it also says that when we stand on the earth, we connect to above and below and the four directions. It's a very local act that we're doing. We look particularly in the directions. We look at what are the qualities, you know. So there is this broad brush thing that I was doing. Well, the quality of the east and the breath and the sword. But actually, if you're working with it in your own place, in your own home, you would stand there and you would connect somewhere with these universal directions, but then you would look at how they're expressed in the particularity of your own environment. So that sense of the universal and the particular and the personal and the universal is there all the time. Now, the other thing about a standing exercise like that, you know, we did it for quite a long time. So it takes effort and will. It stresses the body. It's the opposite energy from the kind of just going down into yourself. Although you have to hold, that particular exercise causes us to hold the tension between the descent and the ascent, and holding it all together around the center point. And the beginning of the poem Prithaya Nun, that place of praising the sovereign, so coming into the center and encompassing the margins of the land, is all that. It exercises a literal embodiment of that bit of the poem. It happens to be also that place of sovereignty, that place of working with the energies of sovereignty and the challenge to sovereignty, is what we find in the first branch of the Mabinogion. Oich, Prince of David. It's a great story. And the nature of the story is all about becoming Poich, becoming Pen Anuvin, becoming Lord of Anuvin. And there's lots of ways to explain the Mabinogion, particularly the four branches. There are hundreds of books written about it, yeah. So what I'm not saying that what I'm saying now is true. I'm saying that it's helpful to me anyway. I hope it'll be helpful to you. Because one of the ways I have of understanding the four branches is around the relationship between the four directions and the center. We could analyze it from all other kinds of points of view. We could look at the historical relationship of the Welsh tribes. We could look at literary influences. We could look at the international folk tale and the old Welsh stories, all of which are interesting, and I enjoy reading about them. But what I'm focusing on here is not that. It's really looking at how these stories can help us connect to the experience of the raid on Anuvin and the expression of our own Awen. So the word poich means sense or caution. And the thing about the four branches in particular, actually, is that they're appallingly satirical. Because Poich, the cautious man, the prudent man, is an idiot. He's not an idiot. He sort of rushes into things. He kind of gets into trouble. He has to be got out of trouble. He is entirely the opposite, except in one or two key places where he is the prudent man, but most of the time he's completely opposite. Now, the writer of the four branches, the four branches are, for those who don't know the Mabinogion, there's Poich, Prince of David, which is the first one, Branwen, Daughter of Clear, which is the second one, Manawathan, Son of Clear, which is the third, and Math, Son of Mathonwy, which is the fourth. Now, underneath the four branches, there is this very ancient story of the imprisoned youth who liberates us, who is the son of the mother. And weaving in and out of the four branches is that story. And way back along in the 50s, a scholarly man called W.J. Griffith took this, I think, in a too literal way, but he's one of the great fathers of Mabinogi scholarship. And he decided that actually that the four branches are the literal story of Mabon. And it kind of makes a rough sense in that he talks about the first branch being about the birth of the hero Mabon. The second branch being about his experiences in war. The third branch being about his marriage and coming into kingship. Fourth branch being about his death. It kind of makes sense if you stretch it beyond all kind of measure and leave all kinds of things out. And he's using a sort of a structure that you find in Irish stories, where a hero is boy. Basically, it's the structure you find in Cuchulainn, really, so it's the Cuchulainn, the great hero of Ulster, is born, is trained, goes to battle, eventually dies. So it's a sort of this life cycle of a hero. more recent scholarship thinks is that while there was something in what he was saying, is that actually he took it to extremes. And certainly I agree with that. I think the key thing about the four branches is that they are described as four branches growing out of a tree. So they all lead back in a way to the central point of the tree, which is the sort of the lost and unknown story of Mabon, the son of Modron, who is the prisoner and the liberator, and who connects together the sword and the cauldron, connects together the male and the female, and brings a new world into being. So the four branches are four perceptions of that ancient story, and they all look at slightly different things. Now, in Ian's theory of the four branches, which this is the first presentation, actually, because I've only really got to grips with it quite recently. And we'll see if it works or not, so forgive me for experimenting on you. Is that the stories are related to the four directions and the qualities of the four directions. So for example, the first branch, which is Pwych, takes place in Dyfed. It's based way in the south of Wales. The fourth branch is based in Caerdethel, which is in North Wales. The second branch, Branwen, daughter of Clear, is orientated on an east-west axis because it's based in Havelech, but it's about to connect the connection between the coast of Wales with Ireland, the west. In the third branch, Manawaddin, the third branch begins in London, in the far east. And there is interplay across the east-west border between Wales and England. Now that was the sort of, when I first noticed this in a way, I got interested in, well, that's kind of interesting. The thing about the four branches is they're written in a medieval form that's called entrelacement, which means interlacing. So things parallel each other, they're not linear. So when they're they're four different stories, but they're stories coming out of the same tree, and they're quite intricately interconnected. Now, what we could say the school of Taliesin were trying to do with this, because at the point at which this was being written, these stories are being written and produced, and it's not just the writers of the Mabinogi, there's the poems of the Chavretanles Taliesin, the Book of Taliesin. There's a lot of activity going on. There's the writing of other stories that are reinterpreting Welsh tradition within the world, within, in a way, the very militant Christian world of the 10th or 12th century. You know, this is the time of, you know, this is not Christianity as we know it now, which is a relatively powerless kind of faith. This is Christianity at the apex of its power. This is a time when the popes are sending crusades to conquer the Holy Land. This is the time when the period of where the Inquisition has actual power over people. This is the time when if you didn't go to church in England and Wales, you could be fined, you could be taken to court. Church attendance was not an optional or nice or personal act, it was a political act in a way. So at the time that whoever these writers are, and we don't really know, but what they're doing is reinterpreting and presenting something, keeping something alive, and it's there in a way. It's there in that story with the dream of Renabwy, okay? Where in that story, the deeper kind of meaning of it somewhere is that something, the fire is almost out. The house is in ruins. What can we do? How do we keep something alive? And so they produce these, you know, quite powerful, quite strange teaching stories that speak. But the problem with the Mabinogi is that it's incredibly evocative. And very often, I mean, I think they personally believe there is a need for structure, not too much structure, because otherwise it kills the life. But without some structure, it's hard to persist with it. And partly it's like that because our culture is so different. You know, I often think about the old boys would have met across the road really once a week because they were the tail end of something. Right, so I've no idea. You know, I've no idea what they were really up to as a kid. You know, I think I remember being there once when they had a meeting. I got checked out because I was a kid, and you know, they didn't want to be bothered with kids. So I can't claim any knowledge of what they were up to. And almost certainly they wouldn't have gone down it and pick up their hat. Right in love, just off to regenerate the world now and keep the old traditions alive. It just wouldn't have been like that at all. It would have been just off to tell a story what you find in the Dream of Rinabwe, keeping something alive so that it can come to life again. And in a way, the point of the stories, of the poems and the stories, is that we can stay with or engage with some of these experiences so that we find it again ourselves, in our lives, in our own creativity. You know, we discover the cauldron of rebirth, the cauldron of inspiration, that will not boil the food of a coward. So we have to be brave enough to stay with it. But I think it's very difficult without external structure. Experience is easily got. Transformation depends upon sustained effort. That's easy to say when we're sitting here, we're all interested in something, we're all supporting each other in that. But come 5:30 tomorrow, we'll go back into our own lives, and depending on how our lives are configured, it's very likely there isn't much around in our own lives that will say, remember this experience, or what are you doing with this experience? Even the way we have of being able to learn this, I have to come here, we sit together, we work in a way too intensively, to be honest, in 2 days, because actually, to get through the material, I sort of have to sort of ram you into it and hope that you'd be all right, so there is a need for some structure so that our minds can understand and so that we can hopefully persist in our exploration of these themes. So this basic structure around the four directions and the four, something that is called the four hallows, find it later in the Grail tradition. And you find it in Irish tradition as well, that the children of Danu, or in Welsh, the children of Don, when they come from the other world, they bring with them four treasures. They bring the sword that liberates. They bring the spear of fire and creativity. They bring the cauldron of rebirth and inspiration. And they bring the stone of sovereignty. I believe really that the one way of understanding the first branch of the Mabinogi, Pwyll, Prince of David, is by understanding it as a story about the direction of the south, the direction of the lance, the creativity, and the sense of lordship. The second story, which is the direction of the west, which is about going into the, and about the, a great war really that happens between Ireland and Wales. It's about working with the energies of death and rebirth. Third story, Manawathan, son of Clear, begins in the east and is concerned with the issues of imprisonment and freedom, And the enchantment of Fault and David and the lifting of the enchantment, the imprisonment of Pryderi and Rhiannon and their freeing from imprisonment, and is concerned with the energy of the sword. The fourth branch, is based in the north in Caerdathil, Mathsan of Methoni, is concerned with the principle of sovereignty and what is it that makes a true king, and concerned with the issue of substance and appearance. I'm going to go through them all the rest of today and tomorrow. But in a sense, the four branches give us material that keep us focusing on the four directions and keep bringing us back to the center. Now, the center point, for example, in the first and the third branches, is the mound of Avbeth, which is the mound that we're working with in our meditations. In the second branch, it is the assembly of the noble head, the head of Bran, son of Clir. In the fourth branch, it is the image of a great oak tree that spans the three worlds, and out of which Chlai, who is the son of light, comes into full incarnation in the arms of Gwydion, who is, in a sense, the false king who becomes the true king at that moment. So, but what I'm talking about, I suppose, and what is being talked about in these four branches, is these capacities inside ourselves. So it is how to become sovereign, how to work with the energy of the spear that represents the energy of our will, and how to align ourselves to that kind of life-giving energy inside ourselves. In the second branch, it is how to work with the energies of death and resurrection, death and transformation. In the third branch, it is how to work with the imprisoned and the liberating energy in us. And in the fourth branch, it is to determine and to rest in our essence and to work with illusion and appearance. And these are, if you like, the four great kind of learnings that the bards would engage with. And they're as relevant now as then, you know. So in the complicated world that we live in, to align to our own will and to the power of life within us, and that power, and to know how to handle that energy. It means how to handle our creativity, it means how to handle our sexuality, it means how to know and embrace our own power and focus it. And it's equally relevant, important, that we know how to work with the energy of transformation, the energy of, and to work with the part of ourselves that can kill. And the importance of that death-giving energy, which leads to new life. It's really important we understand the places that we are imprisoned in. And by understanding imprisonment, we find the way to liberation, to freedom. It's really important we understand the difference between substance and appearance. If ever there was a time in a society where appearance is everything, you know, the appearance of, actually what's interesting for me is Jeremy Corbyn. I'm not making a party political point in this. What's interesting for me about Jeremy Corbyn is he is a bit like the stone, the stone in the hollow. Because he's completely unchanged. I mean, he's become the leader of the Labour Party, you know, unexpectedly. And has he smartened himself up? No. You wearing a tie? No. he's like the stone. Now, we don't have to like Jeremy Corbyn, have any views about him. But what's interesting, I've just been very interested in what's happened there, in that he is like the stone, he is himself. Is he going to kneel to the Queen? Who knows? He's not sure. And there's something about that which he represents, in a way, which is so potent in our world, where the most powerful magic in our world these days is the world of advertising. And it's an evil magic because it's a magic that convinces us that we lack things. It relies on telling us that we need something that we haven't got. Very, very powerful. It's so potent. These are all the power of multimedia, digital stuff. You know, is at the service of this magic that convinces ourselves that we are less than we should be, and we can only be whole by buying something from outsiders that will complete us. And it is the engine that drives our world. And the contrast, the Bard's answer to this by contrast is to say, you are the tree at the center of the world. You are the person that encompasses the margins of the world. You are the sovereign being. The four branches spring out of you. In you is the capacity for creativity and centrality. In you is the capacity to bind and to free. In you is the capacity to kill and make alive. In you is the capacity to know the substance underneath the appearance and to play with the world of appearance. Any thoughts on this before I move on? Where does this take you?
Branches. I never thought of tree. Mm. And so I had one of those moments of, oh my God, the significance of the tree and the tree of life and the whole symbol of the tree and us standing at the centre of our garden. Mm. And I hadn't really got the significance of the Mabinogion, really. Mm. It's almost like I felt like I tried to, well, I still don't after, it's only one kind of hearing. I had a sense, almost like it was like a misty, slippery, mythological knowing with the Mabinogion. Mm. And it feels like actually it places the text at my centre. Rather than me coming to another culture's a different being in relationship to it. So it feels very the world has just gone.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, Fran. The text places us at the center. And the way to Ingrid, and the way to, what I've learned, I think, rather than learn, it's actually the best way to deal with is to be sort of literal. In order to do this thing around the branches, I had to just be literal. I thought, branches, that's a tree, isn't it? The branches. And I think it's that, and of course the other thing about the word Mabinogi is it's a tale of beginnings. So it's a tale of our beginnings. Mabinogi, the tale of youthfulness is the tale of the eternally youthful spirit inside us. And then the four branches then are about looking at that in our lives, looking at that, so it's looking at that So in a sense, that image of Mabon and Modera, and the son and the mother, the child and the mother, come together at the center. And then it's, well, how do they spread out into the world? So in one direction, we've got sovereignty or lack of sovereignty. Another direction, we've got imprisonment and freedom. Another direction, we've got the energies of life and death, death and rebirth. Another direction, we've got we've got what is substantial and what is appearance. Obviously, there's lots of other things we could draw out of it, but there's something about that, for me, gave me a sort of shape to rest in terms of kind of understanding it. Any other thoughts?
What's your view on the relationship with the seasons? Because I'm sort of mindful that a tree, obviously, is very subject to the changing times of year and the four seasons, and do you think there is an overlay with the four directions and the four seasons as well?
It's an interesting question. It might have. I don't know about that, if I'm honest. I mean it's something to think about. I think the thing about your question takes me into an interesting place. If I wanted completeness right now, I could probably answer you. Mm-hmm. Okay, but I know I'd be stretching it. Right, and because you're right, it should do. it should do, shouldn't it? Like, just there's that part of me that would like to say, oh yeah, it's like this. And I don't know, if I'm honest with you. I don't. It. If I think about it, bits of it maybe, and other bits maybe not. And interestingly, it's a version of exactly what W.J. Griffith did, because he wanted a complete system out of it that made sense. And parts of it, parts of it would make sense probably if you thought of it seasonally, and parts of it probably wouldn't. So I suppose where I sit right now, I don't see a seasonal kind of edge to it.
I mean, intuitively, to me, there just seems to be a relationship between the north and winter.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, that makes absolutely me too. It completely does do that. Yes, I mean that's so there could be a relationship between it. But if we said that Poich was about summer, so that's what we could say, right? We could say Poich is about summer. Manawaddan is about spring. Branwen's about autumn, and Math is about winter. If we tried to do that, and if I tried to do that, it really, once the sequence doesn't work for one thing, right? Because you'd be going from, we'd be going from summer to autumn to spring to winter. And the thing about that's great about the Mabinogion, and particularly great about the four branches, is it is. You have to struggle with it. So there's something that's right about your question, right? So there's something there about the seasonal process. And if we try and approach it in a way that makes a lot of sense, we start to hit into, that doesn't quite fit, does it? And if you're not careful, it's at that point that I can just spin off and try and twist the material around and create a justification for it that doesn't really fit. So we sort of have to get... So where we are with that is we're left with, and that's kind of interesting, that could fit, but it doesn't fit. And then we have to be with that kind of dilemma. And eventually, if we stay with it long enough, maybe something will pop up and we'll get interested in that. And it's, in a way, it is the mistake that Griffith made, where he saw... I mean, he eventually produced a 12-point plan around the story of the Mabinogion, where he took Irish material and he said, well, this has been left out and that's been put in, and he effectively rewrote the Mabinogion to make it fit the 12-point plan of the life and birth of Mabon. It was an interesting thing to do, and it has helped all the rest of us who followed. And he's doing this, God knows, at a very early time. But it's important not to repeat his error, I think, and kind of twist the motif. We don't know enough about the material, you see. The reality is that there's lots of things that we know that the bards didn't know, but there's lots of things they knew that we don't know. So we've got to, in some ways, respect the material and listen to it and let it speak to us. any other thoughts before I move on?
It's just interesting the amount of polarities that have evolved in all this.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
I mean, I suppose the industry to gain knowledge or understanding of something has to realise what it's composed of, what anything's composed of, whether it's in ourselves or whether it's in many things. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's so much emphasis on that, on the balance, on being able to recognise polarities in relationships and balances between those things and contrarily imbalances.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things you mentioned there as well was sort of appearance and what's behind appearance.
Yeah.
To me, the whole idea of polarity represents those things, although those are a polarity as well.
Yeah, I mean.
You know, the polarity of everything is related to those things.
For sure, yeah. Yeah. Okay, let's have a little look at Pwyll, Prince of Dyfed. Now we have Pwyll beginning at the Mound of Arbeth. It says he is the Lord of the Seven Cantarevs of Dyfed. And he, in a way, he sets out, he's at the center point. And the story is called Pwyll who becomes the Lord of Anuvin. So at one level, it's really about a human man becoming Lord over the other world. So it begins in a really with a sense of sovereignty and lordship. And Pwyll's name, as I said, represents caution or good sense. That's pretty much what the Middle Welsh term means. And the story begins with him going hunting in Glyncyll. It's down there in Dyfed. So it begins with a descent. It begins with going into the woods, following the stag. Now the white stag is a figure you find a lot in. Doesn't say the stag is white, but some of the speculations around this is it's a white stag, because in a lot of the later literature, you find Arthurian knights and the like chasing this white stag, and white is for this colour of wen, which is connected with the word awen, is this magical kind of colour, unearthly colour. Right? It is partly, you know, we've got the weird rarity of pure white beasts, the albino beasts. So there's this idea that they are somehow magical, connected to the other world. So we have him chasing the stag, going hunting, and he suddenly can hear the cry of another pack, and he comes to a clearing, and in the middle of the clearing, the stag has been brought down by hounds with white bodies and red ears. And so cautious is our man Pwyll, such a man of good sense, he doesn't even stop to think, hang on a minute, there's hounds, whites, red ears, hounds of Annwn, very heavy mothers, let's not mess with those. No, he doesn't do that at all. Sets his dogs on them, drives off the hounds of Annwn. Great discourtesy. In the medieval hunting ethics, this is a serious, serious thing to do. You drive off somebody else's pack. You grab the stag for yourself. So it's a grave offence in a way that we can't quite understand these days. And then riding out of the trees, we have a man with a hunting horn around his neck and a garment of brownish grey stuff. So he's this rather misty, mysterious figure with a hunting horn. Now, what a medieval that there. So, if you talk to anyone in the Middle Ages about red ears, white bodies, mysterious-looking bloke with a hunting horn, he would not mess with that figure, because this is our own Lord of the Underworld. It is also Gwyn ap Nudd, whose hounds take the souls of the dead. This is the Lord of the Underworld. So, in a sense, what Poich is representing here is an inability to restrain himself, inability to stop. He just wants the stag. And at that moment, he doesn't care. You know, he's so pumped up, in a way, with the exhilaration of the chase, that actually, you know, he thinks he can take on the Lord of the Underworld. He thinks he can see off the hounds of Annwn. But we'll do this after we have a break. But what you get given there right in the beginning of the story, in this story that is all about our ability to incorporate our own will and to work with our own will, we're given this image of the part of ourselves, I suppose, where we have very little will, very little presence, very little ability to choose. You know, what's happening is all instinctive action. I want to go hunting, I want the stag, somebody else has got the stag, don't care, I'm having the stag. What we also get given is a powerful image of a clearing with two packs of hounds. One side of the clearing, earthly hounds. Another pack in the other part of the clearing, in the other part of the circle, I suppose we could say, you have the hounds of Annwn. In the middle, there is a dying stag. On either side of the stag, there's Poich. On the other side of his Arawn. Now, this is a very powerful image of opposites, of the meeting of two worlds. So just close your eyes for a moment. In the closing of your eyes, just notice just outside you is the outside world. Everybody sitting here, me talking. Inside your closed eyelids is another world. So if you will, just let yourself sink inwards for a moment, taking the images and the story and the words inwards into you. Feel for a moment, if you can, the clearing at the center of the woods. See the mound at the center. The mound, our breath. Notice that in the clearing with you, your own particular hound of Anun has returned. Let the hound show you some part of the inner landscape that will help you to understand the story of Pwyll Pen Anwfen. Let the hound show you the relevance of this story for your life. Just now. And then just let your attention move outwards again, letting the hound lead you outwards, letting the hound accompany you into this room. And then just turn to your neighbour and tell them what you experienced, or not experienced. Trust whatever has happened. And just speak to your neighbour, just quite briefly. Well, he's going to sit out, he's going to talk to Graham. Yeah. Do you want to sit up? Mm-hmm. Oh.